This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Good evening, I'm David Gale, and welcome to The Informer. Tonight, I'm joined by Paul McClure. Slut Walk is an annual event held in Melbourne to demonstrate against victim blaming and also slut shaming. Tonight on The Informer, we will be talking with Lisa Dibb about this upcoming event. Later, we'll be talking with Lisa Dempster, the festival director of the Melbourne Writers Festival, about some of the events involving queer authors. And we'll be talking to Shannon Power from the Star Observer with a wrap-up of things happening around Australia. In solidarity with international cities, Slut Walk Melbourne stands against victim blaming and slut shaming. It's a controversial name, not a controversial measure. It's still never okay to blame the victim. Tonight on The Informer, we have one of the organisers of this year's event, Lisa Dibb. Welcome, Lisa. First up, when is this year's Slut Walk to be held?
Saturday, September 3, at 1 p.m. outside the State Library.
So it starts at the State Library and then goes down to Fed Square, I think.
Yep, as is tradition.
Now, what is the purpose of the event for those that haven't heard of Slut Walk?
Well, it's basically a demonstration against victim blaming and slut shaming, which hopefully are things people know about. If you don't know, I guess victim blaming is something that happens in society usually to victims or survivors of sexual assault, where the onus is placed on them to have somehow avoided being raped, as if...
Or somehow have contributed to the fact that they were victims of sexual assault or whatever. So, you know, the event goes back to a particular time. I think it was about 2011, where there was outcry over a case overseas.
Well, yeah, the impetus for it was in Toronto in Canada, where a cop was talking about a rape case and advised young women not to, quote, dress like sluts in order to avoid being assaulted, which, I mean, is at the very least poor advice, you know.
Yeah.
But it's, I mean, rape culture isn't a new thing by any means, but I think there was just a group of people that were sick of victim blaming and slut shaming. So Slut Walk, as the global entity we know it now, was born there, and it's in heaps of places now.
Well, it has grown since then, of course. And the purpose, is there any particular purpose of this year's event? I mean, I can see that certainly Slut Walk is becoming more and more popular. Is there a particular theme to this year's event?
No, I think we have the same theme every year, which is rage.
Of course.
Well, yeah, because it's a strange day, because it's fun, even though the subject matter that we talk about on the day is so sad and angering and hugely important and cataclysmic. But it is fun to stand in solidarity. It's just incredibly emotionally helpful to have a really huge group of people who are all on your side. And hopefully survivors who attend the event feel the same way. I think they do, because I speak to them before, after, during the march, and obviously survivors are our number one priority on the march and throughout the rest of the year.
How many years has Slut Walk been held in Melbourne for?
Five.
So five years.
I believe it started in 2011.
And you've participated in many of these events?
The last three, yeah. I started as a volunteer, just as a marshal who... the people in the high-vis vests on the march who, you know, try and keep the crowd in line and just make sure everyone's feeling okay, and they sort of can help out with anyone who's struggling a bit emotionally as well.
Because I want to touch on that feeling, because, you know, I've participated in the Pride March before, and there's something quite empowering about walking down Fitzroy Street and being seen and being quite visible. So obviously Slut Walk is similar in that way. I mean, you're walking down the main street of Melbourne, down Swanston Street. So there'd be people looking at you and wondering, what in the hell is going on here?
Oh, yeah. It is kind of amusing to see people's faces when we pass by and they're taping it on their phones or just staring agog. And I would think that the purpose of our march is kind of obvious. You know, we have a sign-making workshop right before the march, and so the march is sort of littered with signs and T-shirts and banners, and including our own massive sidewalk banner. And they're all pretty direct in terms of the message of being feminist, anti-victim blaming, anti-slut-shaming, pro-survivor rights.
It's really about taking back the word slut, which has been used negatively historically as a word that's been disparaging, and giving it a positive power, if you like.
Yeah, that's definitely something that that the march organisers in general, the world over, have tried to do. We also understand if people don't want to, because obviously... Mm. I wouldn't want to speak for survivors on their behalf, but I do know that there are some people who have a negative relationship with that word. So we would never want people to try and reclaim that word if they didn't want to. And as our sort of unofficial tagline goes, that it's a controversial name, not a controversial message. You know, you tell people that you work with Slutwalk and they're immediately sort of taken aback by the name, but then, you know, it's an incredibly easy message to understand. You know, it's just stop blaming rape victims. I would have thought that was something people could get behind.
And, of course, if people are a little bit concerned about maybe taking part in it, of course they can always line the streets and support. I mean, it's similar to the Pride Parade in the fact that you can be there and at least cheer and maybe applaud the people that are participating in that sort of event.
Yeah, there's definitely things that you can do if you don't want to be on the march. We totally understand. I mean, we'd like the march to be as big as possible, but we understand if people can't make it, don't feel like they're up to it, that's fine. There's just small ways that you can contribute, and not just on the march day either, but just in general. I mean, just little things like, you know, if you hear someone say something disparaging about a rape survivor, call them up on it. You know, little things that make a difference, a small difference in society, you know, a seemingly small difference, but really they're quite big. Changing people's attitudes in such a pervasive rape culture as we have is really important, because that's where you have to start. It's changing attitudes, and then everything else will change.
I notice also that support is ever increasing. Your Facebook alone has well over 6,000 people following it, which means that there is great interest. And I would suggest that anybody listening that wants to check that out, that they should perhaps check out Slutwalk on Facebook as well. Are there any other events during the year that are held?
Not necessarily run by us. I mean, we have the we have our fundraiser, which was a couple of weeks ago, I think. So we have Slutfest this year, which was a fundraiser for the march, and then any additional proceeds, which we usually do have, is given to various charities that are in line with our message, really. But I mean, the whole team from Slutwalk is also parts of other feminist groups, feminist events, and so we try to support them as well, because we've all sort of got the same ideas, really. It's like helping women, helping trans people, non-binary people, anybody that has felt marginalised.
Yeah, which is definitely many of us here. So there's also a worldwide involvement. I know that there's slut walks on at different times, and they're held in cities all around the world. I mean, I was interested to find out that there were cities such as Calcutta and some of the other Indian cities, which would be, you know, the people there would certainly be marginalised even further because of their cultures. So it's interesting to find out, have you attended any of those walks, or do you know of any experiences of those walks?
No, not globally, but it is easy to understand how it would become a global movement. I mean, it's everywhere: UK, America, South Korea. It's easy to understand that people would get behind this, because even in places and cultures where misogynistic attitudes are so prevalent, there is always going to be backlash. It doesn't, you know, whether it's 20 or 20,000 people, there's always going to be people that will hopefully stand up for what's right. And I'm so in awe of people that live in such misogynistic cultures who do, you know, really bravely walk the streets. I mean, even in Melbourne, you know, which people consider to be quite safe, you know, we get some jeers and, you know, a few shouts when we walk down Swanston Street. I mean, it's not too bad, because you're in a big group and you feel really safe with your girl gang or whatever it is. But it just shows that this kind of issue really divides people, which is strange. I really can't relate to people that disagree with. I mean, you know, like, fair enough if you share different opinions to people, blah, blah, blah. But this is just the sort of thing I can't imagine disagreeing with.
Yeah, I know. Look, it's great that you're taking the message out there. And I'd like to thank you, Lisa Dibb, for joining us on The Informer to talk about Slut Walk. There will be details about this event in links on our webpage with the podcast, which we'll post a little later on tonight, joy.org.au/The Informer. Okay, joining us now, we have Lisa Dempster on the line. She's the Festival Director of the Melbourne Writers Festival. The Melbourne Writers Festival is about to be upon us very soon, and I know that tickets are selling very fast. Lisa, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Great to hear your voice. I was having a quick look through the program, and there are an awful lot of things on, but there are also some great events that have a queer slant to them. For instance, there's people like David Leviathan, who's doing a great session on some of the books that he's written.
That's right, yeah. So the festival does have 350-plus events.
Whoa.
And we feature loads. So well done you being able to dig through the programs, start to identify some of the ones that are of interest to you. As you said, we do have a lot of queer authors appearing in the festival this year, which is fantastic. And one of the guests that we're really excited to welcome from the States is David Leviathan, talking about queer YA. And, of course, his writing of LGBTI characters, which are really front and centre in his novels.
Yeah, exactly. He's sort of brought them really to life. And he's actually talking about how he does that, how to write young fiction. I've noticed that session, unfortunately, is sold out. Otherwise, I'd be going along. That's why I was saying that tickets are selling really fast for the Melbourne Writers Festival.
Yeah, that's right, which is always really exciting. You know, we work on the program for over a year to put it together, and we've had many conversations with the writers, you know, including David, as you've mentioned, how to, you know, put together the best kind of event that will showcase their work and be interesting to, you know, an audience in Melbourne. So then when we release the program, it is really exciting when people start, you know, buying tickets or marking things in their diary to come along to.
Yeah, look, I mean, there are different sessions where authors are talking about their books or about particular themes. There's also very instructive things as well. Juliet Jarks, who is known as a trans author, she's actually doing a session which has brought a lot of interest, I thought, you know, because she's talking about how much you should divulge as an author.
That's right. This is one of the sessions I'm really looking forward to in the festival. Juliet Jarks is a British writer, and she had a memoir out last year, and it was one of my just absolute favourite books of the year. It was called Trans, a Memoir.
Mm-hmm.
So she sort of recounts her search for her own identity, you know, in a world where transgender issues are often, you know, understood or unacknowledged. But one of the really resonant parts of her memoir for me was just about her experience of coming out as a writer, really. So she, you know, was an academic and really wanted to be a writer, and I guess recounted a lot of moments that I could relate to as someone who wanted to be a writer in my 20s as well, of sort of working in data entry jobs and writing on the side. And one of the reasons why her writing started to take off was she started to write about trans issues and started to write about her own experiences. And so that sort of led her into kind of an ethical wormhole, really, of thinking, well, okay, I want to be a writer, but can the only way I become a writer is by writing about being trans? Are there other ways for me to navigate this industry, you know, of the journalism or writing or whatever it is. And it's absolutely fascinating to just think about how writers do walk that line of, as you said, how much is too much to divulge.
Yeah.
What is the ethical framework of being, as she calls it, a quote-unquote self-confessional writer?
Otherwise, you become Stephen Fry and put about 16 biographies out. Nevertheless, also in the trans line, I noticed Jessica Walton is there. And, you know, the festival has got things for everybody. And she is actually, she wrote a picture book called, I think it was introducing a character called Teddy for her son after her own father came out as a transgender woman. And it's a session that you can go to. It costs like $10 to go along. It sounds really fantastic.
Yeah, so that's a workshop for children, which is just really interesting as well to think about how we introduce, you know, young people today to these sort of concepts that, you know, we kind of consider as quite adult in some ways, but actually we're all navigating them right from the moment that we're born.
Yeah, look, Dennis Altman is also appearing at the festival. I mean, a lot of people know about Dennis Altman. He's such a, he's an icon in my time, of course. And he will be in Ballarat, which is pretty amazing as well. So the festival does span some other areas. Jackie Brown also interested me as well because she's a great feminist LGBTI rights activist. And she's going to be appearing as well.
That's right. I'm such a fan of Jack's work and Dennis Altman's, of course. As you say, he is an icon. Jackie Brown is appearing at the festival as part of a little mini festival that's running within the broader Melbourne Festival, and that's the Feminist Writers Festival. So Jax is going to be talking about feminism online, really, and how communities or groups of people can use the internet to collectivize and, you know, really make social action happen. And I heard your previous guest was talking about Slut Walk, and it's kind of drawing from the same themes, isn't it? You know, now that we've got social media, there's more and more opportunities for activism and to have diverse voices heard.
Yeah, so that session's called Feminism Online. It's actually a free event at the ACMI, which is just amazing in itself as well. So I don't think there's any excuse not to get to the festival because there is so much on. I heard Rachel Griffiths talking on the ABC the other morning, and she was just saying how fantastic Melbourne is because there is so much to do during winter. She was slagging off Sydney, of course, but nevertheless, you know, Sydney has got something to do during winter, but we are just so spoilt with choice, and the Writers' Festival is one of those things as well. There's also the Queer Literary Salon. Do you want to quickly tell us about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is one of my favourite nights of the year. It's a big celebration, a showcase really, a salon of lots of different queer authors. We've got everyone this year from Rebecca Shaw, who's known as Brocklesnitch on Twitter, Amy Middleton, who's the publisher of Archer magazine, which is a great queer magazine, Ivan Coyote, who's a transgender performer from Canada. So a really diverse lineup, hosted by Geraldine Hickey, who, you know, would be very familiar to many of your listeners, I'm sure. And it's just an event in a bar, very casual, lots of different performances and just great fun and a real celebration of queer culture. And it's always, good for laughs. And when I look back on my year, it's always, one of the highlights for me.
Excellent. Look, you know, all I can do is encourage people to get their tickets early. As I say, David Levithan has already sold out. So we will have links on our website, certainly under The Informer, with the podcast of tonight's episode as well. Thanks so much for talking with us, Lisa.
Thank you. I'll see you at the festival.
Thank you. Now, tonight we have somebody that's actually familiar to the Joy Airwaves, Shannon Power, who I know as Shapow. She's joining us from the Star Observer. She works at the Star Observer now. And I thought I'd have a quick chat with you tonight, Shapow.
Hi, how are you tonight?
Great to have you on the line. Look, now that you're at the Star Observer, we've just actually been talking about the Melbourne Writers' Festival, which certainly features in the current Star Observer at the moment. There's a great article about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially in next month's magazine, Melbourne-based journalist Matthew Wade is doing a massive feature because he's participating as well in the Queer Writing Forum, and we've got a massive giveaway in terms of tickets. So for us, at the Star Observer, it's a really important annual event. Definitely try behind. It's so important to have those voices up there, celebrated and being heard, and we try to do our very best to support them.
Yeah. So at the moment, as well as, you know, I mean, I've been flicking through the current month Star Observer for a little while, but you'd be pretty busy up there at the moment because I think September issue must be coming out very soon.
That's right. So we're in production with it now, which is always nice and hectic. And the next magazine comes out next Thursday, I believe. So this month we have different things. This month we were reading
Now, I know that you can't give away too much, but is there anything you can tease us with?
Well, I'll give you a bit of a hint. It will get the boys growling. Now, I'm not sure if that's giving it away or if I need to say it explicitly, but it is a special bear edition this month. So we've got a very sexy bear on the front cover, lots of great bear stories in there, and I've done a column about a really great community hero who volunteers up here in Sydney with the Harvest City Bears, who just gives his heart and soul to the community. So there's a few heartwarming stories, a few political stories in there. We're featuring Rowena Allen in our coming out a column that we do monthly, and there's a Melbourne Writers Festival story going in as well. So it's a pretty jam-packed September issue, a bit like Vogue every year, jam-packed September issue.
I know there's a lot of guys here at the station that would actually be looking for a bear centrefold. Have you got one of those happening for us?
I've seen the photos. And I can tell you they are very sexy. There may be some honey involved. There may be a bear in the woods, and that's all I'll say for now. You'll have to pick up next month's edition.
Well, I certainly will be. Maybe put in a little bit of a request that centrefold mm-hmm. also be included. You know, to harken back to Clio magazine many years ago. Of course, I awaited the centrefold every month, and Jack Thompson, he was a bit of a bear at the time, I suppose. But anyway, tell me, is there anything else that you can think of that is happening around Australia? Because, of course, you do go all around Australia.
We are national, that's right. So there's some exciting news that's just come out of Queensland, who are always a few years behind the rest of the country, and they've just changed the adoption laws so that same-sex couples and single people can now apply to adopt children, which is absolutely fantastic. I spoke to Stephen Page, quite a renowned national family lawyer, who was telling me that a few years ago, they were fostering a kid, they would adopt her. The biological mother was all up for it, but because they were lesbians, they were not allowed to adopt this child, which is a really heartbreaking story. But, you know, Queensland is amazing. People are just for the laws, and people around Australia are celebrating one.
Yeah, well, that's pretty groundbreaking. I suppose, you know, Queensland is starting to become a little bit of a state where it is becoming a little bit more progressive. Of course, you've left the city of Melbourne in Victoria, which is probably the most progressive state. But that's great news to hear about. What else is on the agenda, do you think?
There's quite a bit going on. Obviously, things are heating up in around that quality. I'm not quite sure we're at marriage just yet. So there's obviously been the faction of different marriage equality support groups. They're adamant it's not Rodney Croom, the national director, stepping aside to focus solely on not having a plebiscite going ahead. But there's so many different groups now who are campaigning around marriage equality in different ways, which I personally think is fantastic because we'll need people who need to campaign having a plebiscite. And there's also so we really need to start galvanising our community and really strategies about whatever the outcome, whether it's in Parliament or decide how we as a community will make sure marriage equality happens sometime in the next few months.
Well, exactly. And I think, you know, we'll see Parliament certainly resuming towards the end of this month. And the more people that are talking about this, the more pressure does go on. It's a shame that we do have certain people that lobby government as well, but it does take some time. And we're going to have to see which way the parties decide to approach this whole thing. It might be a unity thing where we do go to plebiscite, or it might be an opposed thing, in which case, you know, who knows, there might be a vote forced in the Parliament after it resumes. So we don't know what's going to happen, but I know that, you know, if I need to get some news or if I need to get some information, I can go straight to Star Observer. There's a website, of course, which is
starobserver.com.au.
And of course, you can actually subscribe and get it emailed or just sent to you every month, which is certainly a good way of finding out. Shanna, do you mind, or Chappell, do you mind if we talk to you again at this time next week?
That sounds fantastic. I'd love to.
All right. So the new issue will be out next week?
That's right, Thursday, I believe.
All right, so we'll be able to have a chat about what's happening in that. And it's great talking to you. I'd love to talk to you on a regular basis. Talk to you next Tuesday night.
Great, thanks for your time.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.